We have our last regularly scheduled legislative hotline today with 12th District State Senator Keith Gaynor. Our last hotline altogether will be tomorrow with Representative Steele and Burnett from District 12. But this, our last scheduled rendezvous with Senator Gaynor, unless special session occurs and he's kind enough to take some time with it during that. We'll talk about the likelihood there and also special session aside with budgets and taxes in mind. And Keith, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much.
Well, it's always good to be with you. Thank you.
So, again, that's kind of the, as I made the joke, I think last week, the elephant in the room, even though the governor is a Democrat, so that'd be a donkey in the room, I suppose. But budgets and taxes, these are huge issues still. The budget in general, overall, as we look at the potential for a special session because of all the consternation there, again, including maybe in most prominently coming from the governor. So bring us up to speed. We're into the 11th hour and 59th minute now, it would seem like, with the sessions ending this weekend. So where are the budget processes at the moment, and what's it looking like as far as special sessions concerned?
Well, that's a very good question. As late as yesterday, we had both the appropriations in the House and Ways and Means in the Senate. We're still discussing budget bills, and that would entail what kinds of things would impact the budget, both from a revenue and an expenditure standpoint. So here we are on day, 102, and we're still talking about, you know, exactly what will impact that budget. As far as the budget negotiations, the Republicans have not been in the room at all. I mean, we have somebody that's appointed to be a conferee, but it's a closed-door session that doesn't include, you know, our side of the aisle. So we're all kind of wondering, you know, how will things settle out? Because, you know, when you build a budget, you have to determine what your expenditures are and whether you have revenue to cover those. And if not, then you need to adjust those expenditures. So one of those two things will happen. Either they'll increase revenues or decrease the commitments that they have. So it's really a wait and see. The plan is probably for us in the Senate to see the budget come over from the House on Saturday and then vote it on Sunday. And we're talking about a, you know, $75+ billion budget, which you have less than 24 hours even to peruse. And then, you know, to have any meaningful discussion, I mean, that won't happen. I mean, it will be done and we'll either accept or reject. And I would anticipate that, you know, our side of the aisle will say, no, we don't even know what's in here. So it'll be very difficult for us to have a bipartisan supported budget.
Keith, is that a common practice with the majority party to have no one in the room except for that conferee, as you're talking about, when budget negotiations are occurring, or at least budget strategies?
Well, unfortunately, for the operating budget, it is. There have been times where we've had more of a bipartisan approach to transportation, and more so even with the capital budget, where they've actually worked together, you know. But the operating one is the one that drives both transportation and the capital this year. It always does with the capital, but the anticipation was there would be some collaboration with the operating fund, actually providing some future benefits to transportation. I mean, the shifting of some funds, because we're so far behind in transportation. The idea was if we generated revenue and relieved some of those transfers that had been coming over from the operating fund, that in the future there would be that they'd actually kind of direct some sales tax money toward transportation. But that seems to be kind of sketchy whether that will happen. So it's really an unknown as to, you know, what will happen based on past performance even. So, because this is kind of a whole new realm for me, because since I've been here, we've been a little closer, you know, to have such a major deficit that you're trying to fill. It is a different environment.
12th District State Senator Keith Gaynor with us today here on the KPQ Morning Updates. All right, Keith, so the budgets obviously are the big divide right now, and the biggest divide within those, I suppose you could say, would be taxes and taxation. The Democrats proposing an awful lot of new taxes. The Republicans, of course, pushing back on a lot of that. And the governor as well saying that he's not going to sign a budget that includes new taxation, in particular the wealth tax that he'd already sort of nixed earlier and said no way. So I would imagine those things are remaining constant right now. as far as the governors are concerned. I want to talk to you about Governor Ferguson and his place in all this. But first, talk to us about that taxation, the real concerns that you have.
Well, let me just say and repeat, because we've said this before, where there was a budget that was proposed by the Senate Republicans that had no new taxes. It had increased investment because we had more revenue than we had planned in the last biennium. We have an investment in education. We had invested in more law enforcement. I mean, there were some significant investments, and it was basically, keep the government going the way it is. And we weren't even debating whether the merits of the government as is was, justified or not. We're saying, let's just keep it, and we can do it without taxes. But what has happened is, with the increased desire for additional services, there has to be more revenue. So then that brings us to, well, where does it come from? Well, the taxpayers pay for it. And what we're seeing right now is we had a list of, I think, 50-plus services that will be subject to a tax, going to the dentist, going to child care will be, taxed. It just touched every aspect of people's lives, and I just can't, I can't believe that, we're doing taxing anything that is being provided, and a lot of the things are actually subsidized and paid for by the state. And with Medicaid, so we have a lot of, lower income people that are relying on state subsidies to receive these services, only to now have those services be taxed. So there's some significant impacts to, I think, every walk of life in the state.
So Keith, again, with the new taxation in mind, Governor Ferguson again has pushed back on that himself, said he will not sign a budget that has those new taxes. Do you feel like he is going to stand, I guess, as steadfast as Republicans are on this issue, or do you feel like he's going to give in or soften a little bit, or perhaps even altogether, when it comes to his party's desires with the budgets?
Well, I think he's put in a very, it's his responsibility, of course, to sign off on that budget, but he's being put in a position where some of the things he's been very clear about, I trust that he will stay firm. I mean, like when you prepay sales tax, like they have for businesses that have over $3 million in gross sales, they're going to prepay their tax into this biennium and not into the next, so that you can book it, and that's how you're balancing your books while you create that hole for that next biennium, which I would think that type of revenue generator, the governor would say, no, this is not good business. And some of these other things with the services, particularly, the behavioral health was one too that would be taxed. I mean, things were, drug counseling, the kinds of things where we're really trying to make, progress in helping people get on their feet, and then to make it more difficult for them to get those services. I would think when he looked at the budget and said, well, this is not something that we can be relying on for, revenue generation. So I think what he'll have to do is kind of go down the line, and maybe when I say pick and choose, I mean prioritize those things that, we have to make sure that they stay available for people without, taxing them out of viability. So he has a real challenge ahead of him, and I'm very, I feel badly for him in a sense in inheriting what he inherited, because this was something that we had anticipated happening, but we've been able to, when I say we, I mean the legislature has pushed it down the road, and now it's finally coming to, to roost. I mean, we're now all the commitments that we've been making are now there, and they have to either be funded, or we have to tell people, that which we promised you is really not going to happen the way we had anticipated. And so the governor has to make those decisions too. And unfortunately, that's a pretty heavy weight on him, when we really, as legislators, should have been more responsible in providing him with a more viable choice, I guess, as far as keeping government going here in the state of Washington.
12th District State Senator Keith Gaynor with us today here on the KPQ Legislative Hotline. All right, Keith, let's move on from budget and taxation and talk a little bit about a couple of bills that are apparently sort of toggling back and forth between the House and Senate now as we wind down the sessions, the regular sessions at least, for this year. Let's talk about the rent control bill first. You've talked to us about this one a number of times, so tell us about where this one's at.
Well, it it passed the Senate with the 10% cap, and it also had exempted out single family, you know, homes. So, I mean, it kind of softened the blow, so to speak, by people who were providing housing for others. But then the House, they wanted it to be only a 7% cap. And so that seems to be the biggest sticking point. They also wanted to limit the increases to 5% on mobile home parks, which unfortunately will probably make it very difficult for people to even stay in the mobile home parks, because I'm anticipating those that own those facilities will say this is not something that we can take the risk on because of the you know, the responsibility you have to maintain those facilities. So, you know, I hope we can get something resolved that is not totally, you know, take this away, that option for people. But, you know, ideally, I would like to see where we just have landlords and housing providers, you know, be responsible enough that they don't make, you know, these significant increases that really do price people out of their housing options. But on the other hand, we have to let the people who own those properties have the flexibility to, you know, recover what they need to recover for maintaining those facilities. So I don't know. We're going to conference. We'll see how that settles. But it's a big one for us.
Another big one, Keith. It's been a real headline grabber throughout the sessions this year, has been the one related to parental notification rights. This is also being, again, sort of metronomed back and forth between the House and Senate at this point. So where is this one at?
Well, it passed out of the House. It's coming back to the Senate. So we will have to decide whether we will accept the changes that they made. And I know that the House, they went long, many hours, you know, talking this one through because they did make some changes from what got sent from the Senate. And of course, you know, we weren't really happy with what we sent over that direction. And then, in my opinion, it actually, you know, got worse as far as the notification for parents. So, once again, that'll be probably, we'll be asking us to concur with their changes. If we do not agree to that, then it also will go to conference, and then it'll have to be worked out with the conference committee. Or we may just decide, you know, not to even deal with that legislation. But that's, I think that was such a high priority for the Democrats that I'm sure that something will come of it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is there any chance either of these will simply stall out and die for these sessions, or are something going to be done with each of them, do you think, before we're said and done?
Well, in my opinion, we can hope. But I'm sure the people that are, you know, pushing hard, they will, obviously they brought it forward, and there are strong proponents for these ideas. So, you know, it'll be one of those things we'll have to just wait and see.
Keith, as far as legislation that passes in the sessions during the regular sessions, as you know, per usual, is there anything that squeaks in sort of under special circumstances at the 11th hour, even beyond that, when sessions are literally just about to gavel to a conclusion for the sessions, or even slightly afterwards? Have you ever seen anything like that happen? Or is it really just, no, these are hard cutoff deadlines. If something doesn't happen by the bell striking midnight, that's it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we do have, like you say, policy deadlines where it's not, you know, can't go beyond here. It didn't make it out of committee. It's dead. And then, you know, there have been times where I have seen legislation actually happen because it got snuck in as a proviso in the budget, which we don't see, like I mentioned, until the last 24 hours, and you have 900-page budget, and all of a sudden, you know, later on, you know, halfway through the year, you look and, well, yeah, there was a line item that allowed for this to happen because it was in the budget. So, yes, there are ways that things that you think may be gone can find their way back into our lives. And you think, well, how did that happen? Well, it got snuck in. And as I said, you know, there isn't a real good opportunity to analyze what all is in that budget until kind of after the dust settles somewhat.
Keith, you mentioned the size, the sheer size and enormity of these budgets, you know, the number of pages. Do you read, or do you even at least peruse all of these pages yourself, or do you have helpers that work and other legislators who work with you in tandem to sort of do that work?
Well, we have, you know, on our on both the caucuses, Republican, Democrat, I mean, you have people that are working the budgets and they try and, you know, follow those. But as I said, when you're doing a budget where one side does not have an idea and does not see the paperwork that the other side is using to craft a budget, you know, it's nigh on to impossible to get through that in 24 hours. I mean, you will look through that. For me personally, no, I haven't been able to go through all 900 pages, you know, obviously before I vote, but I do like to try and think that, you know, I've spent enough time to kind of, you know, get a good handle on what's there. But there's so many things, you know, Chris, that are in that, in the budget, you know, well, how does this, you know, relate, you know, and so you have to actually understand the lingo of what's actually in the budget. Sometimes it's not as clearly spelled out as you would like to think to be able to determine where that expenditure, you know, materialized.
I'd hope that maybe the laws would already not favor some of that subterfuge that you're talking about, Keith, with being able to do line items and things like that. It seems to me like that should be off the books and not be legal, but I guess it is. It's a standard practice in the legislature from what you're saying. So hopefully you're keeping an eye out for it. And again, we, as always, appreciate all the information, the time, and the hard work you're doing on behalf of your constituents and the citizens here in your district. So, Keith, I appreciate your being with us during the legislative hotline this year. I'm not sure if we're going to talk to you during special sessions, should that occur. If so, I'll look forward to it. If not, again, thanks so much for, again, this year's sessions and our hotline time, and we'll look forward to future chats.
Well, thanks for having me, and I do appreciate your willingness to engage like this, because people need to be aware of what's going on over here. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. We would definitely appreciate your valuable time throughout the sessions as well.